inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
Back in the late 90s, my guest on the podcast today was working in a factory. He wasn't making a ton of money, but he had a burning desire to buy rental properties. Flash forward to today, he owns 70 rental properties. He doesn't work in the factory anymore. He's able to support himself off his rental income. So on the podcast today, I want to talk about the period of time from when he bought his first rental property up to when he was able to quit his job because his rentals were making enough money for him to support himself. Joining us on the show today from Winchester, Virginia, is Mike Grams. You may remember Mike. He's been with us a couple of times before in the past. He's always got a ton of great information to share, so I look forward to catching up with him. First, let's take a real quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back, and we'll talk to Mike. Having to evict a tenant is painful. The best way to protect yourself from evictions is to screen tenants, and the best way that I know of to screen tenants is TransUnion Smart Move. It's a really valuable online screening tool delivering credit, eviction, and background reports in minutes. And their proprietary tenant credit check predicts evictions 15% better than generic credit scores. See why over 4 million landlords have used SmartMove to make better leasing decisions. Use code RENTAL25 at checkout to save 25% at tenantscreening.com. That's code RENTAL25. At tenantscreening.com.
Are you on track to achieve your financial goals? Income-producing real estate is the most historically proven way to accumulate wealth and has created more financial freedom than any other means. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best turnkey cash flow rental properties. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly income. Get your free strategy session with our knowledgeable investment counselors at noradarealestate.com. That's N-O-R-A-D-A realestate.com.
The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified, and I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. NMLS 42056. For anyone that hasn't heard your first two appearances, can you kind of just take us back for a second and tell me what you were doing before you started buying rental properties?
Sure, I'd love to. Let me first of all start off saying that I am a high school graduate. I just graduated high school. I have no other education other than that. And I had a real good friend of mine who was a real estate investor. He owned a bunch of rental properties, but he had a lot of education and all that. And we became real good friends. Him and his wife and my wife and I became real good friends. And I always thought it would be kind of fun to be a landlord, but I never, you know, I worked in a factory. I was just a factory worker. I worked over on a machine. I was kind of handy as far as knowing how to repair or fix a couple of things, but that was basically all I ever, you know, had any background in. And so my wife and I got to thinking, you know, well, I got to think, you know, maybe I could buy a rental property because my real good friend, he has them. And, you know, maybe I could do it, you know. And my wife said, no, Mike, I love you dearly, but, you know, and this is no cut against you, but you're just, you know, you don't have the education. I don't have the experience. I don't have the background of being a landlord. That's just, you know, it's nothing against you, Mike, but that's just, you know, you're not like that, you know? So I went with my wife and I said, honey, look, here's a real good deal. I've been praying hard about this deal, and we bought our first property. And so,
so when you bought that first property, were you thinking, well, maybe we'll make a few hundred dollars a month off this, or maybe this is going to appreciate in value? What was kind of your thinking back then?
Back then, like I said, the only thing that I kind of knew is I kind of know how to fix stuff. I'm pretty good that way. And so the first piece of property I bought was a three-unit place. And the reason why I bought a multi-unit place was I could have had two places sitting empty, and the one place still would have covered the mortgage payment.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I may not have covered much more than that, but I kind of felt, you know, hey, if I have one place sitting empty, okay, it will still cover it. If I have two places, that's going to be really tight. Maybe it didn't quite cover the whole thing, but, you know. And so that was the reason why I picked a multi-unit place, mm-hmm. Because I didn't want to have to use my own money to be able to fix anything.
Right.
But I thought, you know, we could or pay mortgages or anything like that. And I was also thinking that short term, I could be able to, if I needed to fix something, repair something, that was the only thing I had going for me.
So it's almost,
I kind of felt comfortable that way.
It almost sounds like you accidentally figured out cash flow, that you kind of through that the way you were thinking about it, you ended up kind of stumbling on cash flow. Is that right?
I broke down how much it's going to cost me. Okay, my mortgage was going to be this much. My second mortgage was going to be this much. And then the rent is going to be this much. And so is there more money after the rent, or is there more money after the mortgages are paid? And the insurance is going to be this much. I really didn't even budget back then. I really didn't even budget too much, awful much for repairs, because like I said, I kind of felt, you know, if I had to spend $300 to fix a water heater, I could do that.
So were you after you had that property for a few months and you're looking at the numbers, and you're seeing, wow, you know, this property is actually making us money every month. Is that when you started thinking, if I get a few more of these, maybe I can leave my job?
It was probably not until I got closer to 10 pieces of property that it really became too hard for me to keep both going.
Okay.
It wasn't the fact that, hey, now I'm making enough money I can quit. It got to the point where, hey, this is getting way too hard for me to do both. I just can't do both.
Did you think at all, because you self-managed back then and you still self-managed today, did you think about getting a manager to help you out?
I honestly didn't know anything about managers back then. I didn't know there was a such thing as property managers.
You know, it's so amazing the world we live in today, where, you know, just 20 years ago, there really just wasn't the information out there. There wasn't podcasts. There wasn't all the information you have on the internet today. There weren't even a lot of meetup groups like we have today.
I didn't know anything about the meetup groups either until about maybe 5 years ago. So you're right.
Yeah,
it's really
Absolutely. Really pretty incredible. So I think you told me once that at some point, like, you just were having a bad time, or maybe you were starting to like your job less, and is that kind of how you started to think about leaving your job, that you weren't enjoying it as much?
Yeah, I got to the point where I ended up having to put myself on third shift, a night shift. Now, I'm not knocking my job at all. It was something that I felt I needed, and it paid my bills and all that kind of stuff. But I ended up having to go to night shift so that I could do all my landlording, if you call it that, mm-hmm. on during the day shift and try to sleep a couple hours. And so I started doing it that way. What I did, I guess it was for about 6 months or so, somewhere around in there, I said, honey, why don't we go ahead and just take my paycheck that we received from the factory, and we'll just set it aside, and we'll have it there in case we need it, and we'll try to live off of my rental income. And here again, I really didn't have a game plan. I knew my mortgage payments would be this, and my insurance was this, my taxes was this, and this is how much money I had left over. And so I was living off of the money that I had left over. And we did that for about 6 months, and that worked out good. That worked out good for us.
Now, did you have any fear when you were thinking of leaving your job? Like, did it occur to you, gosh, you know, if everybody leaves at the same time, or if I need to put five new roofs on at the same time. Did you have any fear that like maybe something bad could happen, or were you not even thinking that way?
I never even thought that way. I should have. Yeah. I should have been, but like I said, I didn't know anything.
Yeah, you didn't know.
Then.
You didn't know.
I was buying stuff when everything was going real good.
Right.
The economy was great. Everything, well, as good as it could be, but everything was going good. And so I didn't know what a bad turndown time was. I didn't even know what that entailed.
That's incredible. All right. So let's talk about the financing a little bit. So you're a factory worker. Like you're not a doctor. You're not a lawyer. I mean, you don't have tons of money. Can you tell me about like how you were financing all these properties?
Sure. Back then it was really a good program called an 80-20 deal. And I always like to use easy numbers. Just makes life easier for me. I would like I said, I would look at the let's say the property sold for $100,000, and then so I would go to the bank and I would ask the bank to lend me 80%, which most banks back then 80% they feel comfortable to do that. Mm-hmm. They'd do that within a heartbeat. And so they lent me they said yes, I'll give you the 80 in this case $80,000. And then I would go to the seller and say, hey, look, I'm giving you the full price of the, I'm offering you, I'm willing to pay $100,000. With that being said, I'd like for you to pay my closing costs. And then also I'd like for you to be willing to hold 20% with maybe a 30-year mortgage with a 3-year balloon. Okay. Do you want me to elaborate on that or not?
Let me make sure everyone understands that. So you're going to the seller and saying, Mr. Seller, I want you to loan me 20%. And then you're going to the bank and saying, you're going to loan me 80%. So you're able to finance the whole thing between the seller and the bank.
Correct. Now, and what I mean by a 3-year balloon is the seller's not willing to finance the thing for 30 years. Mm-hmm. At the end of it's a 30-year mortgage, which means my payment would be very low, because if you spread out, you know, the second mortgage over 30 years, that makes a low payment. But he wanted his money back within, in this case, 3 years. So that's what we mean by ballooning in 3 years. I have to pay him off in 3 years.
So you would take, just to make up numbers here, if you're buying a property for $100,000, mm-hmm. you're going to get mm-hmm. an $80,000 bank loan, and that mm-hmm. $20,000 that you're going to give Mr. Seller, you're going to take that $20,000, divide it over 3 years, over 36 months, and whatever that is, that's what you're going to pay him every month?
No.
Okay.
I'm taking that $20,000 and have a 30-year mortgage.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And that way, that payment would only be, in this case, a $20,000 second mortgage at, let's say, 4 or 5%, would only be about, $200 or
okay.
so. Whereas if I did the $20,000 over 3 years, then I'm looking at, you know, almost $2,000 a month.
Sure. And I couldn't
afford that.
And then what was the plan in 3 years? Because in 3 years, you're going to owe him a bunch of money.
Right. Then at the end of 3 years, I still wouldn't have the $20,000 saved up by then. But like I said, back then, the economy was so good. I thought this was the way the economy always worked. I didn't know any different. Uh-huh. That the property was going to increase in value. So, like if I bought it 3 years ago for $100,000, 3 years later after that, it would be worth maybe $120,000. And this was no exaggeration, maybe even more.
Right.
And so then I go back to the bank and they do an appraisal on it, and they'll see that it's now worth, let's say, $120,000, $130,000, whatever. And they'll give me 80% of the $120,000.
Right.
And then that way, with that extra refinancing job, Now I've paid off the first. I now have enough money to pay off the second. And now I only have a one mortgage payment that is, in this case, 80% of the new appraised value.
Right.
Does that make sense? Does that make sense?
That does. And I hope it makes sense for everyone listening. But yeah, like that. So you're basically counting on appreciation to give you that. So when you refi, you can get rid of that other payment. Now that strategy that you used, to be honest, in all the interviews we've done here, that's never come up. When people have done seller financing, they're usually financing the entire property. But I've never heard of anybody financing a down payment. I wanted to interrupt the interview real quick. After we recorded the interview, I checked with Chailey Ridge from Ridge Lending Group to see if it's possible to do what Mike did back in the 90s. And she said it's not today, that you need to actually have a 20% down payment today. But what you can do is, if you have one 20% down payment, after the loan closes, you can get a friend, a relative, even the seller to loan you 20%, and you can have them put a second lien on the property so that you can get back your 20 grand, and then you can use that to buy the next property, and you can keep on doing that over and over and over again. So you just need one down payment, and you can really buy an unlimited number of properties. All right, with that being said, let's get back to the show. So basically, with the strategy that you were doing with the seller financing, once you kind of mastered this, were you thinking, gosh, like there's really no limit to the number of properties I can buy as long as I can keep convincing sellers to finance the down payment?
Exactly, exactly. I thought the sky was the limit.
That's great. So then did you just keep on buying properties pretty aggressively over the next few years?
Yes, I did. I still had my job at the time, and that's what ended up happening. I started buying, I don't want to say too many properties, but I started buying and buying and buying, and that pretty much like that. And then it also got to the point where properties were increasing in value very well, and so I would be able to refinance and then take out a line of credit on a property A or B or whatever. And then it got to the point where I was just basically offering cash to the seller, as far as, because I have a line of credit sitting here somewhere. Say, hey, I'll give you $100,000 for this place if, I can close tomorrow because I have the line of credit, or basically cash
right
in their eyes.
So, all right, just to make sure everyone understands that. So say you bought a property, again, just to make up numbers, you bought a property for $100,000, and it appreciates in value to $200,000. If you can get the bank to give you a line of credit for that appreciation, you can take that appreciation and buy another house with that appreciation.
Exactly.
That's what you're doing. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. With that being said, I would be very highly leveraged that way.
A lot of people that we've had on the show like to buy, I guess like they kind of specialize in something. So we have, a lot of people will maybe figure out how to make money with C-class properties or B-class properties, A-class properties, or they'll figure out some kind of niche, like maybe college rentals or something. With you, like you've kind of mastered buying all different types of properties. Can you talk to me through that? Like why? I guess how that worked, like how you bought A, B, and C properties.
Sure. I started out with all pretty much C properties. They were the easiest to get into and be able to get. And I also kind of feel the C properties generated the most monthly income. Mm-hmm. Now, they may not have increased in value as quickly as maybe an A piece of property would, but they produced a better return monthly. And so once I have established once I hadn't started getting a lot of C properties, then, like I said, I started getting more equity. And then as I was getting more equity, I would refinance them and have a bigger line of credit. And then I was able to start stepping up to buying the B properties and then maybe some A properties also. Mm-hmm. What I have found is the A and B properties. Now, this is just me talking, and everybody's going to have their own opinion, and their own opinion is going to be exactly right for them also. This mm-hmm. seems to be what was right for me and what kind of like worked for me. The C properties are the properties I have to physically work the hardest for. As far as, okay, I got to go fix this. I got to go take care of this. I got to go do this. I got to evict these people. I got to. Right. That's what I find with more C properties.
Right.
Compared to the A and B properties, I'm not trying to knock any tenants or say anything bad about anybody or anything good about anybody. It's just the fact that I seem to have less headaches when I'm renting an A property compared to the tenants seem to take a little bit better care of the properties. They're not going to tear them up as much. The tenants seem to maybe be a little bit more established in their profession as far as working and all that. And so they're a little bit more stable and are able to pay their rent a lot better. But the thing is, I have to pay more for an A property. And so you can only rent a piece of property for so much. And so it may not quite make as much.
But it's a lot less. So the A is a lot less work, but yes. Maybe less hassle.
Yes. Less hassle, less work, less profit. But now the other thing about A properties that I've noticed also, they may increase in value a little bit better, even in a slower market. Mm-hmm. Now, a down market, nothing's going to increase, right. But in a slower market, they may increase a little bit better compared to a C property that it's just going to stay where it's at.
Right.
It's not going to go up or anything.
So
like that.
Those C properties are cash flow machines. I mean, they're generating a lot of cash for you. I like the way that you kind of have all your bases covered. So the C properties, I mean, they're spitting out money every month that you're living on, but the A properties are kind of quietly in the background building wealth for you. Is that fair to say?
That's a good way of saying it. Yeah. Now, you know, I've been doing this for 20 plus years now. And so a lot of my properties are getting paid down or paid off. Mm-hmm. And so that makes a big difference also. If I bought an A property, even if it wasn't A or B property back 15, 20 years ago, that's gotten paid down pretty good now.
Right.
And the rents over 15 years have gone up pretty good. So that's kind of like helped me a little bit as far as making cash off of those properties.
Yeah. So do you have any A properties that maybe, like, looking back at it now, like what you know about how to make money on rentals now, that maybe they're purchases you wouldn't have made today with the numbers at the time, but over 20 years of rent increases, 20 years of appreciation, those have ended up to be really good properties where maybe mm-hmm. if you had analyzed them harder, maybe you wouldn't have bought them.
I see what you're saying. And here again, I think if I understand correctly, and I don't mean to be very vague in my answer, but if I would have to pretty much defer that to, it all depends on the individual person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't mind working my butt off on C properties. I didn't mind it. I like going and fixing toilets because I'm kind of good with my hands. I like running a little electricity. I like doing some carpentry. It's something I actually enjoy doing.
Right.
So whereas someone else may not know which end of a – and I don't mean to cut anybody down, but somebody else may not know which end of a screwdriver to hold.
Right.
And that's perfectly fine.
Right.
It may be a master musician, which I can't even carry a note.
Right.
So, you know, that's fine.
Right.
So – to me, I think I kind of bought everything the way I feel comfortable with. Yeah. I don't know if I would have changed much of anything.
And you probably shouldn't. I mean, you really did things right. Mike, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today. I really appreciate it. And I also want to thank Chailey Ridge from Ridge Lending Group for sponsoring today's episode. If you are looking to buy a rental property, whether it's your first property or you want to add to your portfolio, the lender that I recommend is Chailey Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender, and she specializes in helping investors buy rental properties. You can find out more and get started today. Just go to ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. And if you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will waive all the pre-qualification fees. NMLS 42056. I'd like to thank AutoSlash for sponsoring today's episode. The next time you need to rent a car, if you want to make sure you're getting the best rate possible, go to AutoSlash.com. The way AutoSlash works is it searches the internet, it finds you every available discount, every available promo code. So when you book your reservation, you know you're getting the best rate possible. After you make your reservation, you can put your reservation on the tracker and AutoSlash will continue to search. And when it finds you a better rate, it'll send you an email letting you know you can cancel the first reservation with absolutely no penalty and rebook at the lower rate. They save their average user 30% off the best rate that they can find on any other car rental website. And the best part about it, it's totally free. So the next time you need to rent a car, go to AutoSlash.com. That's AutoSlash, AutoSlash.com. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. We'll be back with a new episode next Tuesday. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.